Hello, listeners. Welcome to season 7 of the Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm a managing partner here at Big Rio and Demo Consulting. And I'll be your host today, along with Rohit, for the Big Unlock podcast. And today, we are really excited to welcome Zaw Tett to our podcast. Zaw is the co-founder and CEO of Exer AI, a digital health company using computer vision and AI to assess, coach, and improve human movement. Zaw brings an unusual combination of experience as a serial entrepreneur, investor, and operator, having previously been a founding partner at Signia Venture and CEO co-founder of 4Info. His current work with Exer sits at the intersection of musculoskeletal health, physical therapy, sports performance, and AI-powered care delivery. And I'll also mention here that Zaw has been one of the youngest graduates at Stanford Business School, right? I saw that on your bio when I was doing some research. So welcome, Zaw. Really excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, when you say all of those things out loud, it makes me blush that I've been doing this now for 25, 27 plus years. It's a pleasure to be here and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Rohit, would you like to have a quick introduction and then we can start with the questions?
Yeah, thank you, Ritu. I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Big Rio and also the co-host of the Big Unlock podcast here. So welcome, Zaw, to the podcast. We really appreciate the friendship. And looking forward to an engaging discussion.
Great. So let's get started. So Zaw, tell us about Exer, which is built on the idea that movement itself can become measurable through ordinary cameras without, you know, wearables or any extra hardware. So what does that unlock in healthcare that we, you know, previously just couldn't do when movement assessment depended mainly on like either in-person observation or wearing these devices?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, thank you again for having me. To go into sort of why human motion matters, I think we need to rewind just a little bit and go back to about 8 years ago when we decided to start the company. One of the things that I was looking at as an investor and going across multiple different types of digital health disciplines and digital health companies to potentially invest in was looking at all of the different potential applications for AI in those. And so this was before Chat or Claude or any of the current LLMs and big models were out there. And so what we were really looking at was around discrete sets of data, because I believe that all AI is based on the moat around the data that it has been trained on. And one of the things that became very evident as we were talking to people across multiple different disciplines and departments was there was a ton of data contained in the chart, right? All the companies that were looking at EKGs, that were looking at blood panels, et cetera, they are all basically training on the same types of data. There was a lot of early AI, not really happening yet, but starting to come into fruition around anything that was related to the back office of a health system operation. So revenue cycle management, administration, pre-authorization, like you name it. There was a lot around, especially even back then, around digital scribing. So being able to, whether you have an ambient scribe that was listening from the room and trying to improve workflow for notes, or if you had something that was just as easy as a dictation, right? That was a big deal 8 years ago, was just using Nuance to basically dictate notes as opposed to having to handwrite them or type them out. But what became evident was that in all of the imaging that people were doing, x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, the challenge was that actually seeing dynamic human motion was something that really didn't exist. And of course, it existed in gait labs where you have multi-million dollar cameras and rigs, sensors that were set up. But in order for it to be deployed on the edge and or deployed in clinical settings and being able to be used by a mass amount of patients, what we heard over and over again was that, hey, it would be really helpful, even though we don't have this data today, we don't know exactly what it means yet, but it would be really helpful if we could capture human motion basically in a clinical environment, at a patient's home, over telehealth, and be able to understand what that actually means for their different types of disease. And so that's the basis on which Exer was formed, with the understanding that there was a lot that needed to go into building it. There was a lot of research that needed to go into validating all of the different algorithms that are used to look across different assessments and different phenotyping for different types of diseases. That's basically how we got started. And then obviously it's evolved a lot since then.
Great. So you're not just building another healthcare app. You actually want to turn the camera into this scalable clinical and coaching tool for movement health. So tell us, like, how do you think, you know, this real-time AI coaching changes like patient engagement and outcomes compared with, you know, traditional home exercise programs or where you're actually telling the patients what to do?
Yeah, a lot of people in the early days mistaked us for a PT company because a lot of the motions, right, the assessments that people are doing are around basically those fundamental human motions of a hinge or a squat or a pull or a gait walk or, right, someone doing a walk. But when you think about, no one had really ever thought about how do you apply that to clinical settings as a whole. And so when we first started, the feedback that we got from people was, hey, if you want to make this work inside of very, very large health systems, which we're inside of 25 of the top, I think, 50 health systems in the US at this point, how do you basically deliver a platform, right? Not a single point solution. And a platform meaning it just doesn't apply to one department, but it applies to orthopedics, it applies to neurology and neurosurgery, it applies to primary care, it applies to PM&R, it applies to pain spine, et cetera, et cetera. So that was one. The second one was, how do you actually deliver on the three legs of the stool, as we call them? How do you deliver better patient outcomes, right? Demonstrable better patient outcomes, better clinical efficiency. So actually taking time that would normally be spent by either a clinician, right, a nurse, a PA, an MA, and making that more effective for them so that they can scale across more patients. And then also, how do you potentially increase new revenue streams for a hospital where they may not be capturing it, but now they have the ability to bring some of that in-house? So those were two primary drivers. The others, of course, are sort of like par for the course, right? You have to have the regulatory approval. So it has to be a class two medical device. You have to go through all the security compliances. So it has to be SOC 2 and HIPAA compliant. And then you need to make sure that this is something that's also clinically validated, right? So there are peer-reviewed papers that are published across all of these different things. And so the way we set about it was, hey, we're going to build two different parts of AI. We're going to build one, which is the neural net that basically allows us to see the human body, but without having to be in a gait lab. So just being able to use a phone, an iPad, that's most clinical settings, a phone for patients that are basically at home. Being able to then deliver it across multiple points of care. So primarily where we first start is actually in clinic, usually outpatient. We also offer telehealth and at-home options. And then we just started to scale and built a research arm across multiple different disciplines. So I'll give you a quick example and then I'll pause. So let's say you're going in for a total knee operation. Total knees are probably the most common orthopedic, I think they are the most common orthopedic surgery done in the US. There's over a million total knees put in every year. The current standard of care for a total knee, you go in for a visit with your orthopedic surgeon. They assess your knee, they look at it, they test it, and they say, okay, well, yep, you're a candidate for a total knee, where they're going to sign you up 3 months from now. You're going to sign all the paperwork. You're going to get sent for a long leg x-ray. And a long leg x-ray is basically where you're standing statically, straight up and down. They ask you to put your kneecaps together and they take a picture, right, with the x-ray. And what that picture is used is basically to understand, like, here's the degree of which the angle from your hip to your knee to your ankle. And everyone walks a little bit differently, right? Some of us walk a little bit more bow-legged with a little bit more varus is what it's called. Some of us walk the opposite with a little bit of valgus. But none of that is captured in an x-ray today. So instead of that, now, right, there's all this research that's coming out and that has come out, and that x-rays are not a great way to actually predict that, but it's state of the art. It's the plan of care today. So instead, what if you were able to actually just have an iPad in the clinic room? So when the patient signs up to say, yep, I need total knee surgery, you instantly are able to assess their gait in under 20 seconds and understand their patterns of circumduction, their patterns in terms of where the knee actually falls as they're putting the maximum amount of load on it. And all of that done in 20 seconds by a medical assistant. So when the doctor actually comes in the room, they already can see all of that information in the chart inside of Epic or whatever the EMR is. And then pre-surgery, it's done again. post-operatively, it's checked immediately afterwards to make sure that it's still aligning with the angles that the surgeon wanted to put the new knee in at. And then 3 months down the line, as the ligaments get a little bit more lax, you're still tracking to see and make sure that that patient is operating under with sufficient gait characteristics and dynamics. So that's just one example in orthopedics across multiple different departments that we work with is of how we see this and how it is already being deployed today.
Wow, that's an amazing example. And when you, you know, describe it that way, it sounds so like eye-opening. Like how could a static picture tell you like that much when you're seeing it with the iPad? So that's something really interesting. So how does the tele part of it work, Zor? Like if the patient is at home and you're doing like a tele appointment, then you just recording them on like a normal iPad and you still get all the information, or how does that work?
Yeah, so telehealth and at home works usually over a web browser. It's typically the easiest way to do it. So it's all done inside of any modern web browser, Chrome, Safari, et cetera. And it's the same basic tools. It's a little bit different, right? Because then you have the clinician that's obviously on the telehealth call with the patient. It's a little bit harder for the patient to maybe set up in their home environment, but especially for anything upper body, we can see it. One of the big areas that we see around telehealth is for neurology. And so one of the things that we're able to track very well, because we see the whole body, is actually looking at 22 discrete points on the hand. And so we can look at this for orthopedics, right? As people, usually telehealth is done for a screening or a post-operative visit, especially if you're dealing with a destination hospital, right? Somewhere where people are flying into like a Mayo Clinic or others, which is one of our great partners. And so if they're doing that, then the opportunity for them to not have to travel to get that same level assessment is very powerful. And so we can track where they are on their recovery curve. So as their surgeon is looking to see like, okay, is this hand actually able to get full range of motion or not? Very, very difficult, right? Even under a physical exam to use something called a goniometer to measure MCP, PIP, DIP, all the way to the tip on every single finger for both hands at the same time. Our platform allows them to do that instantaneously. So that's one example. Another great example on the neurology side is for tremors. And so because we can see this, we can actually track and see how pharma is affecting a tremor. So if they're going on and off drugs, as they're titrating different kinds of drugs, we're able to see if that tremor is being affected for good or for bad, as well as other balance ataxia measures. And then for post-operative as well, right? Or tracking disease progression over time, we're able to see lots of different things. So that's how the telehealth part works. And there's also an at-home, which works over a browser or as an app on their phone as well for the patient.
I just wanted to ask you, Zor, that how did you get started in this space? What attracted you? You know, and then any prior, you know, ventures in healthcare that you would like to share about with the audience?
Yeah, so I don't come from a traditional healthcare background. I come from a software startup tech background. I do come from a family of physicians. So both of my parents are physicians. And like every good immigrant, first generation immigrant, I was supposed to go be a doctor or an engineer or maybe a lawyer as third tier. And I chose a different path. When I went out to Stanford in the late 90s during the first dot-com boom, this was like the early days of pets.com and eBay, and I hate to date myself, but Google wasn't even out yet. So it was an opportunity that I saw to just, I'd always been interested in technology, finding, and I think what I found for my true calling was solving big problems in society of some shape or form. And if I had the ability to do that using technology, then I could scale that to millions of people. And I was lucky enough to do that in mobile and in a bunch of other different areas. And so I think one of the things when I was first looking at potentially becoming a doctor was I loved the impact and I loved the mission and the purpose behind it. I love helping people. It's always been something that's been a purpose for me. But I wanted the ability to actually deliver that at scale. And the problem that I saw was that just using, if it was a one-to-one ratio between the time that I spent with someone and the help that I was able to give them, that was amazing. And I could help that one person. But my superpower, I guess, was the ability to build these big platforms where instead of I could spend an hour, but instead of helping one person, hopefully help 1,000. And I think that's the big vision for us as we look at the healthcare system. When we were first getting into this, and how what interested me was I saw a lot of inefficiencies in it. And maybe I was a little bit too naive and I said, this looks like a big problem that needs fixing. I didn't realize how complicated it was 8 years ago when I got into it. I joke that I don't still have a full healthcare license yet. I have like a green card. I'm still learning every single day. There are all these acronyms, all these different systems, all these different things I had to figure out. But what I found was that the ability to actually deliver precision medicine at scale, especially when we're dealing with such shortages from staffing, right? We've got a severe shortage of doctors. We've got a severe shortage of nurses and PAs and an ever-aging population, especially in the US, that only is increasing the demands of the healthcare system. Those two things are fundamentally broken and they're not going to fix each other. But yet somehow healthcare still works, right? We all complain about it. But yet, if you look at the average age of you know, survival rates for cancer or cardiac events in the US, they're all going up and up and up in terms of survival. So the medicine is getting better. We are helping people. It's just a really broken system. And so my hope was that this could be one component of that and fix this ability for us to allow clinicians and providers to deliver better medicine at scale, but work with them and not against them. And I think that was another big tenet that we had early on.
So Zog, my next question was kind of a follow-up to what you said before, where you said, you know, XR has so many applications across like physical therapy, senior care, orthopedics, sports, like you can think of so many things. So far, whatever you've worked with for AI-powered movement health, so which market do you think has been the strongest and which one do you think can become the biggest long-term opportunity for you?
Yeah, people have always asked us, especially in the early days when we were doing this, no one had ever seen anything like this in 2018 when we had our first demo running. And everyone wanted a better golf swing. I think that was the biggest thing that everyone asked for. Tennis, surprisingly, also is a big one, right? Hey, can you track my tennis serve or my tennis swing? Can you track my golf swing? Sometimes we get baseball or lacrosse or like some of these other sports as well, but that was the big one. And we looked at all of these things really early on, right? And we said, okay, we could build a consumer-based company that does very, very specific sports applications like golf or baseball or tennis, et cetera. Or let's start where the science is really hard. If we can prove that we can do this for the top level doctors in the US and do this with them, and that's where the research originates, then we have an opportunity at a later point in time to go anywhere that we want with it, right? If you think about like Amazon just started selling books. That's sort of like the first inning of which we think we're really still in today, which is like we focused on healthcare. We focused on delivering a platform to health systems and to providers. We're not selling directly to consumers. And maybe that was the harder route to go, but I think it also allowed us to not spend a huge amount of money on marketing dollars, to not have to go raise hundreds of millions of dollars to go do it, and to keep patients and keep the team lean, because healthcare is something that actually just takes a long time. No matter how much money you throw at it, there's so much red tape and so much research that has to go into it. And I think that's our secret advantage, is we've got 4 years, hundreds of thousands of patients that have now been run through IRBs and clinical studies, a very proprietary data set, right, that no one else has, where it's clinicians and researchers that are using XR to basically record the patient movements, not the video, but just the body points as they move, tied back to all the clinical data from their chart. So we understand what a gait shuffle looks like. Does that mean arthritis? Does that mean stenosis? Does that mean Parkinson's? And to do all of that and to also do golf, I think would have been very, very difficult. So we've stayed in our lane and we're going to be there for a while because there's still a lot that we have to do in healthcare before we get to the quote unquote, the fun stuff.
Fun stuff. Exactly. Thanks. This leads very nicely into the next question, Zor, which is basically, you know, that we are talking about this continuous functional monitoring. And right now, wearables are having a big moment. And we talked to a lot of other clinicians and doctors, and they were talking about how outdated this whole idea of like an annual physical is, where you go to the doctor once a year or something. So how do you see this kind of tying into, you know, a more continuous monitoring of patients and finding problems early because you're able to monitor them?
Yeah, I think it ties in really well. I mean, we've been big fans of working and partnering with other companies that are more device specific, right? If you look at companies that are doing this, it's obviously there's the consumer companies like a Whoop or an Oura Ring, right? There's the more medical grade companies like a Sensor Bio. You've even got data coming off a watch, right? Like my Garmin or an Apple Watch. So I think there is a lot of room in this space for continuous monitoring. Obviously, it's been happening at a certain level with patients that are at home for diabetes, right? Especially for that sort of management. The challenge that I think on the continuous monitoring side is filtering through all the noise, right? There's a lot of signals that potentially come out of these devices. How do you have the understanding to really know what matters most? And I think that is going to get solved. It's probably not going to get solved by someone like us at Exer. But where Exer comes in is that, hey, a big component of that annual physical is a movement screen, especially as you're talking about a senior population, right? 65 plus, et cetera, where you're looking for issues, you're looking for fall risk, right? Which is related to gait and balance and a whole bunch of different things. Falls are the number one basically cause of death and the number one cost to our healthcare system for people over the age of 65. And so if we can prevent that, if we can get ahead of that curve, right? Instead of having someone checked every 12 months, if we can once a month have them basically do a movement screen where all of their wearable data is being pumped out, right? So if they have low blood pressure that may cause them to faint, that's coming from their wearable. If they have an issue with something else, like there's a arthritis in their right knee that could potentially cause them to fall, that's coming from us. I think it's definitely the future of medicine, and it's going to get there over time.
So as we see the AI landscape is changing so fast, could you give us some tips or tricks on how to keep up with that and then how you're thinking about incorporating some of the new developments into your offering to the clients?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's moving at obviously a phenomenal pace right now. It's funny because, you know, when we first started, we were really one of the first true AI companies in healthcare. But because of the research and time that it takes for us to be clinical grade and deployed inside of healthcare systems, we've had to be very patient with it. Now you're seeing algorithms coming out left and right, whether some of them are just based on a bit large LLM models. Some of them are actually based on real data, right? You have the open evidences of the world that are helping physicians find things faster. So it is a brave new world, and it is very, very hard to keep track of. I get all the sort of email digests from Silicon Valley still and look at all the top things that are going. I think for consumers, I should say that for patients, right? I think all of those things are happening without them really ever being able to see it. I think there are starting to be some patient-facing applications which are really interesting, like scribing your own doctor visits, right? And recording that. All of us usually take notes or sometimes hit the record button because there's so much information that comes out of it. Inevitably, we all feed that into some LLM like a chat or a Claude to ask what's going on. It's probably better than playing Google Doctor in terms of like what we used to do. There's a little bit more titrated information. But I think for a large part, most of the AI that patients see in healthcare is behind the scenes. Exer is actually one of the exceptions to that because you actually get to see it in the clinic, right? When you come in for a visit with your doctor, whoever that is, you are being assessed and there's a playback feature, which we see is the number one thing that's used basically after someone does an assessment is the clinician will pull it up. They'll go through it with the patient. It looks like a skeleton that's moving, but you can tell that it's, you know, what that patient is doing, even if there's no actual video that's there of them. And in some ways they like it because it actually takes out, did my hair look good today? Or like, was I wearing the right clothes? Like none of that is in there. So that's one side of it. And then as a business owner, as someone that's using this all day, every day, like I think all of these things are phenomenal tools for making your business operate and punch above your weight class. So a ton of our customer support is now handled by AI agents, right? If you look at our ability to make our developers more productive, right? I would say they're at least two or three times more productive because a lot of the junior developer tasks like QA and you know, code checks and all of those things are all being done by AI. So there's tons of different ways to incorporate AI into your actual business that I think are only going to continue evolving. And that one is really hard to keep up with. We tend to find one that we like, stick with it, and then we're probably prone to not switch as much as possible.
Awesome.
Great. So I think we're almost at the end, Zaw. So would you like to share any closing thoughts or any, you know, you have been in this industry for a long time. You started with computer science. So what do you think, you know, where is all this headed? And if you can tell us like about some top trends or if you're looking into your crystal ball, what do you think is coming in the next year?
Yeah, so I think I'm a big, obviously, optimist. I think I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't an optimist and believe that like we can change the world for the better. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's some potential backlash, right, that's coming and that we just need to be aware of, especially in the healthcare industry around the use of AI and how that works and how that's going to interact with patients. I'm already starting to hear, right, some really early pushback from systems around like, oh, like we have, especially for anything generative AI, right? And generative AI is where the AI is basically generating that quote unquote content itself and directly having a patient interaction without any human in the loop at all. And so the capability for those is really, really good, but a small percentage of the time it messes up, right? It hallucinates or something else happens and it sends really bad info or things that are not appropriate at all. And we're starting to see some of the first lawsuits come out around that. And so I don't think that that means that it's going to go away, but I think there's going to be a point where everyone was super excited. And then for anything without a human in the loop, and extra thankfully, there's always a human in the loop because we provide support to clinicians and we don't replace them. But for anything without a human in the loop, there's going to be some pushback for a while about, can this directly scale to consumers? Because how do we handle these instances where it is sending something that's not correct? And then who becomes liable? So a lot of that's going to get sorted out, I think, in the next couple of years. But in the end, I think we're obviously going to end up with a much better and more efficient system. So that would be my crystal ball in terms of things to look out for.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I think you raised, you know, very good points because of the ability of, you know, generative AI to hallucinate or mess up. Sometimes it leads into a lot of ethical questions, because the moment you remove the human from the loop, then, you know, you're kind of ceding control or trusting it. So then it needs to be fail-proof, which it's not currently completely.
Not yet. We're going to have agents watching agents watching agents.
Yeah. In a recursive loop.
Yes. And then maybe a human to check it at the end. We'll see.
Yeah. Who will guard the guardians?
That's right. Well, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Zor. Thank you for being on our podcast.